And good morning. You turned into the KGNU Morning Magazine. It's Friday, February 19th. I'm Roz Brown at 8:06. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
We have reached our 1 million mark. We have now administered over 1 million cumulative doses across the state of Colorado.
Many of these immigrants will either themselves be American someday, or because they belong to communities that also include a lot of former immigrants.
One of the most important things we can do is change the way Congress thinks about our forests.
Then on October 17th, and plumes of smoke just started billowing from North Boulder, where we lived.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine. Coming up, as more vaccines become available, Colorado's cases of COVID-19 and hospitalizations are trending down. But health officials are monitoring variants coming from other states and countries. Then Democrats have unveiled President Joe Biden's sweeping immigration reform that could put 11 million people on the pathway to citizenship. We'll talk to a CU professor on what that means for Dreamers and others. There's snow on the ground today, but the threat of summer wildfires is keeping Colorado politicians busy and listening to those affected by last year's record-setting fires. At 8:30, KGNU's Weekly Connection show comes your way with host Duncan Campbell. Duncan's guest today is Hedrick Smith, Pulitzer Prize winner and former New York Times journalist and the author of Who Stole the American Dream? Then stay tuned at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music with Meredith Carson. Meredith is here until noon today, then we'll have an update from the BBC. But first this morning, we'll start with headlines. Colorado health officials say as of yesterday, more than 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered to Coloradans. That means officials are nearing their goal of inoculating 70% of all people 70 and older. We'll have more about progress with the virus shared at a Thursday news conference coming up after headlines. There's some hopeful news for hundreds of thousands of Coloradans still waiting to receive Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA, payments. Administrators with the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment say Phase 2 of the PUA rollout plan will start Saturday. That means claimants who had exhausted their previous benefits will now receive more unemployment money from the Federal Continued Assistance Act that was signed in December. That's the good news, but there's also less good news on the employment front in Colorado. KGNU's Steve Miller reports that a wind turbine company based in Denmark has laid off 450 workers from Colorado's manufacturing plants.
The wind turbine company Vestas Wind Systems AS announced Wednesday that they laid off 120 workers at its tower manufacturing plant in Pueblo. The Pueblo Chieftain reports that Vestas also laid off 50 workers at its Windsor Blade factory and closed its Brighton Blade factory, where 280 people worked. At its peak, Vestas employed more than 800 workers at its Pueblo Tower plant. The company said that the workforce reduction was due to market demand. Jeff Shaw, executive director for Pueblo Economic Development Corporation, said that there are other companies looking for high-trained workers like those that were laid off. He hopes that PEDC can assist in finding the laid-off workers other jobs. Vestas hopes to transition some of the laid-off workers to other jobs in their organization, like servicing the products already in the field. Vestas plans to repurpose the Brighton Blade site into a North American headquarters for its global tooling business. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And speaking of unemployment, an additional 12,000 Coloradans filed for traditional unemployment benefits last week. The Colorado Department of Labor and Employment said Thursday that marks a drop of about 1,900 from the week before. In a speech on the Colorado House floor yesterday, Colorado Supreme Court Chief Justice Brian Boatwright addressed allegations of sexual harassment. In the State of the Judiciary speech, Boatwright, who was sworn in last month, said the judicial branch takes allegations of misconduct by judges and staff extremely seriously and vowed to examine allegations of sexual harassment and gender discrimination within the judicial branch. The first accusations came to light about 18 months ago. In one claim, a former chief of staff was alleged to have been awarded a training services contract to prevent her from filing a lawsuit, revealing incidents of sexual harassment and discrimination inside the department. Another Colorado representative has jumped into the race to challenge District 3 Congresswoman Lauren Boebert in 2022. State Representative Donald Valdez, a Democrat representing parts of southern and southwestern Colorado, announced Thursday that he is vying to unseat Boebert. The announcement came in a video posted to his Twitter page in which he said Boebert egged on the participants in the December 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. State Senator Carrie Donovan has already announced her intention to run for that seat. She's also a Democrat, and several other Democrats are also exploring a candidacy. University of Colorado representatives testified before a Legislative Education Committee Thursday in support of a bill moving through the Colorado General Assembly that would grant in-state tuition to members of American Indian nations with historical ties to Colorado. The bill requires the state's public colleges and universities to provide in-state tuition classification to American Indian students from communities with cultural, geographic, and other historical ties to Colorado. Members of dozens of indigenous groups stand to benefit if the bill passes into law. Yesterday, the Colorado Senate Education Committee approved the bill by a 7-0 vote, and the bill will now move to the Senate Appropriations Committee before advancing to the Colorado Senate and the House of Representatives for further discussion. If the bill becomes law, advocates say it would increase college affordability for American Indian students and enable them to pursue their academic goals in a region many consider part of their ancestral homeland. Currently in Colorado, non-resident American Indian college students, including those from indigenous communities with Colorado roots, are required to pay out-of-state rates. The Boulder Valley School District announced Thursday that spring graduation will be socially distanced in-person ceremonies the third weekend in May for the class of 2021, similar to the ceremonies held for last year's graduating seniors. The district said graduates will be limited to two guests each, with families sitting together in groups of three. Some of the schools will need to have two ceremonies to keep the audience a reasonable size, but all ceremonies will be streamed live. When the Perseverance rover touched down on Mars Thursday, it carried the spirit of a Colorado hero. Perseverance carried the name of Kendrick Castillo, who was killed while trying to stop a shooter at STEM School Highlands Ranch in May 2019. His parents say their son was obsessed with science and robotics, and so it's a fitting tribute. The rover embarked on a two-year search for life in a crater on Mars after a 239 million-mile journey that took 7 months. And it wasn't your imagination last week that the Arctic blast over the past week was extreme. Meteorologists now report that the week from February 10th to the 17th was officially the coldest week in Denver in 7 years. The average temperature was 6.5 degrees. The recent polar plunge included five consecutive sub-zero overnight lows. That's five, and that has only happened twice in this century. Well, much warmer today, a high of 45 under sunny skies. Low tonight, 22, and then tomorrow it will be 43 degrees with a 40% chance of some rain or snow, 38 on Sunday, but back up to 53 on Monday. And right now it's 17 degrees outside our Boulder studios. It's 8:14. Colorado health officials announced Thursday that COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are continuing to trend down. Dr. Rachel Hurley, the state epidemiologist, said when it comes to the 50 states, Colorado is about in the middle of the pack and has been for a couple weeks.
So we continue to see a decrease in the number of cases that we're seeing here in Colorado, but much of the country is experiencing the same thing. Increasingly, we are seeing some states that have more rapid rates of decline in cases than Colorado is seeing right now. But overall, you know, Colorado and the U.S. continue to be on a great trajectory with downward trends.
Downward is also the trend on hospitalization, according to Hurley.
So you can see that, again, we continue to have a clear downward trend in the number of hospitalizations that we're seeing here in Colorado. We've certainly come a long way from our peak in early December when we had more than 1,800 Coloradans hospitalized on a given day. We're now down to 425 confirmed hospitalized patients here in the state. We peaked at a lower level than the U.S. did overall, and we continue to have a lower number of hospitalizations per population than the rest of the U.S. is experiencing right now.
Hurley also provided information on troubling variants of the virus that have been showing up in multiple states.
So now in Colorado, we've experienced 71 identified cases of the B.1.1.7 variant. This is the variant that was first identified in the U.K. For variants under investigation, we have had 29 of these identified, and these are all the L452R variant, which has also been identified in California and Denmark. Just a reminder that there is a distinction between this variant of concern definition and variants under investigation. The variants of concern, like the UK variant B117, are variants where we've identified concerning characteristics of those variants. So things like increased transmissibility, variants that could potentially cause more severe disease, reduced effectiveness of treatments or vaccine, or that these variants could potentially be harder to detect with current tests. The B117 variant that we are concerned about here in Colorado and in much of the US, there is potential for that variant to spread more rapidly. That is certainly why we are tracking it here. There's also some limited data to suggest that it could cause some more severe illness. We have not identified the other variants of concern that are being tracked in the US right now. So that includes the P1 variant, which is the variant that was first identified in Brazil. And then the B1351 variant, which was the variant that was identified in South Africa, that variant and the P1 variant have not been identified in Colorado at this point. Those are variants where there is potential concern about effectiveness of vaccine or treatment. But again, we have not seen those yet in Colorado.
Colorado health officials also said more than 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered to Coloradans as of yesterday. Here's Deputy Director of the state's Vaccine Task Force, Kate McIntyre.
Of that 1 million, the first dose has been 748,151, and second doses administered is 333,859. In phase 1A, we are confident that everyone who in the healthcare worker group was offered a vaccine dose was able to get vaccinated with their first and second dose, and close to 90% of the rest of the people in phase 1A, assisted living facilities, has also had the chance to be vaccinated. In phase 1B, we are close to 90% of the rest of our healthcare workers across the state, first responders, as well as our EMS folks.
McIntyre said health officials are nearing their goal of inoculating 70% of all people 70 and older. That's about 56,000 vaccinations short of meeting the goal Governor Jared Polis set for the end of February.
We will continue to vaccinate beyond the end of February, which is our goal, those 70 and above, to ensure that we're making progress toward vaccinating all of our 70 and above, which is over 550,000 folks across the state of Colorado. We've also made good progress on our goal of vaccinating educators and staff, as well as licensed childcare workers by the end of February, and folks who are 65 and above.
McIntyre did note that Colorado had delays in deliveries of the vaccine as winter storms have affected much of the country.
Unfortunately, the weather not only prevented planes from getting off the ground earlier in the week, but it also prevented workforce from getting to be able to axe delivering ancillary kits in Tennessee, dry ice in Kentucky, and vaccine production in Michigan. Despite that, there were big efforts last night to move to a 24-hour operations in order to get back up to speed as quickly as possible. And now it is looking like most of our shipments expected for this week should be delivered today through Saturday. So that's good news.
Again, that was Deputy Director of the state's Vaccine Task Force, Kate McIntyre. It's 8:19 here at KGNU. Democrats in Washington formally filed President Biden's immigration bill yesterday as they attempt to create a path to U.S. citizenship for DACA recipients and the other 11 million undocumented immigrants. It's the first major immigration legislation in more than three decades. We spoke to Ming-Su Chen, an associate professor at the CU Boulder Law School and faculty director of the Immigration and Citizenship Law Program, about the significance of the legislation.
This is really big. This is a dramatic shift from where we've been in the last 4 years, and I would say even where we've been in the last decade. You know, we haven't had a major legalization program since about 1986, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, or IRCA. And that particular legalization bill was also different in many ways because it was just as much about legalization as it was about strengthening enforcement. So, you know, that's the closest analog, is that the bill we had in 1986. And I think this in many ways is more ambitious than the 1986 bill. During the Obama administration, we didn't have legislative reform. We had a number of attempts that were unsuccessful throughout the 90s and the 2000s that would have tried for some kind of a Dream Act, maybe an ag bill, which would have helped farm workers in addition to the Dreamers. But because that never passed under Obama, we just had a stopgap measure, right? We had deferred action, which allowed brief reprieves from deportation, but didn't provide a pathway to citizenship for a pretty select group of immigrants. And, you know, that was formalized as the DACA program in 2012, but it was not a path to legalization. Well, I think that if you look at the scope and the ambition of the bill, I do think that in addition to providing a path to legalization for undocumented immigrants, I think it is really trying to make the whole immigration system work better. Right. So certainly for undocumented immigrants, but also for legal migrants who are coming through family sponsors or through employer sponsors. There are whole provisions about how to expand family reunification. A lot of the pieces on employment-based migration are things that businesses have been wanting, both to help farm workers and then also at the other end of the income spectrum, high-skilled workers, sometimes referred to as H-1B workers, those who are working in STEM-related fields. And there are pieces about fixing the immigration courts. There are pieces that deal with the border. There are pieces that deal with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. So, you know, sometimes people talk about immigration reform as being like a three-legged stool, you know, where you have to think about legal migration and you have to think about border enforcement. And then you have to think about interior enforcement or, you know, deporting people who are already inside the country. And I think that, you know, this bill really tries to speak to all the different dimensions of the immigration system, which, you know, I think across the political spectrum, people have felt for a long time does need improvement.
Also Thursday, the Biden administration announced new guidelines expected to sharply limit arrests and deportations carried out by ICE. That would be a rollback of the Trump administration's hardline immigration policies. Professor Chen is hopeful Biden's approach sends a more welcoming message to immigrants than they've heard in the past 4 years.
Many of these immigrants will either themselves be Americans someday because they will be able to naturalize. They'll be able to get green cards and then they'll be able to naturalize and become U.S. citizens, or because they belong to communities that also include a lot of former immigrants or communities that have a lot of immigrants within them, you know. And so I do think that message of inclusion and of understanding immigrants to be part of our communities and in some cases future Americans is one of the biggest innovations in the bill. And, you know, I think that reverberates in the language, replacing the word aliens with non-citizens, right? I think that what that does is to really underscore that immigrants are on a spectrum to citizenship. You know, they might not be citizens yet, but they're of a piece. They're on a spectrum. You know, they're not a different species. They're not in such a completely different category as aliens and citizens. And symbolically, I think that is really important. And I think that it's important to remember that in the last 4 years, the pendulum swung really far. So, you know, to move immigration reform toward the center, and in some cases to gesture beyond it, is a big change. But some of the reason it's such a big change is because we had swung so far to the right in the last 4 years. I hesitate to even call it moving to the right because, like I said, I don't think it necessarily represents what establishment Republicans have wanted for immigration reform in the last 20, 30 years. I really do think that there's been a very loud, vocal minority of more extreme voices on immigration. So in that sense, I hesitate just to refer to it as the right or the left or the Republicans or the Democrats. But I do think it's important to recognize, you know, to step back from where we've been and to recognize that immigrants are people, again, that many of them are part of American communities. Many of them will themselves become future Americans.
Again, that was Ming-Su Chen, associate professor at the CU Boulder Law School and faculty director of the Immigration and Citizenship Law Program and the author of the book, Pursuing Citizenship in the Enforcement Era.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services are available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT is available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at centennialpeaks.com.
Last December, Colorado Senator Michael Bennett introduced a conservation bill that would set up a $60 billion fund to support a range of projects from wildlife mitigation to river cleanups. The legislation followed Colorado's 2020 devastating wildfire season, including the Calwood, East Troublesome, and Cameron Peak fires. Yesterday, Bennett joined Congressman Joe Neguse, Senator John Hickenlooper, and Governor Jared Polis for a public wildfire recovery listening session to hear from Coloradans who were impacted by the fires.
We're working as a delegation to get more resources for Colorado to recover, including FEMA disaster relief and USDA funding to repair our damaged watersheds and protect critical infrastructure. I also want to mention that looking ahead, one of the most important things we can do is change the way Congress thinks about our forests. Politicians in Washington need to understand that in Colorado and across the West, forests are our infrastructure. They are as important to our state's economy as the Lincoln Tunnel is.
To New York. The Lincoln Tunnel in New York, yes. The Calwood Fire north of Boulder last October burned more than 10,000 acres and was the largest ever recorded in Boulder County. On yesterday's call, Courtney Walsh shared her story about losing her home in that fire.
I was just shocked and just concerned with the Pine Gulch fire, the Cameron Peak fires this summer. The smoke in Boulder was so thick, and we actually worked really diligently as a community to keep our FireWise status, to mitigate fire in our neighborhood. We worked really hard, actually, to do that. And then on October 17th, my family and I were having lunch in Boulder to celebrate my birthday, and plumes of smoke just started billowing from North Boulder, where we lived. And we jumped in the car. Minutes later, received a text from Office of Emergency Management that we were being evacuated. I turned to my kids and I just told them that we were going through a fire drill and just assured them that everything was going to be okay. My son called our dogs into the car. My daughter wrangled her two little bunnies into a cage, sort of frantically running through the house to decide what to grab. You know, what do you take in that scenario? You know, I grabbed some family art off the wall, photos, some my camera, other keepsakes. But, you know, we only had 10 minutes to evacuate. And then the Boulder County Sheriff actually roared up our driveway and told us to evacuate immediately. But I'm thankful we were able to safely evacuate. And, you know, as you mentioned, my heart goes out to the families who lost loved ones who were not able to evacuate. So, and also, as Senator Hickenlooper just mentioned, the wind just started getting out of control that day. It just grew and it tore through our neighborhood. And then we learned, you know, that our house was gone. We saw a random photo from the National Weather Service with our roof on fire. And then we knew at that point that it was gone. It would be great to have some sort of official communication, you know, some kind of real-time updates about the status of wildfires. I don't know what that looks like, but something to kind of help with the communication just for families and for people in the community. Since the fire, you know, it's just been really hard on our family, just trying to manage day-to-day mental health. My kids are resilient, you know, we're only 4.5 months from the fire, but, you know, we're just sad. Thankful for our lives, but sad. We still don't know the cause of the Calwood fire. It's unknown. The one thing that people ask when you lose your home is, are you going to rebuild? And it's actually a really painful question. We're never going to be made whole, but the insurance battle has been just absolutely terrible. I don't wish it upon anyone. We've had to pay out of pocket tens of thousands of dollars to clean up the rubble. And we're, you know, in a position to be able to do that, but I don't know how other people would possibly be able to do that. But again, we feel really lucky. We have our lives, we have our family and friends. And we can't imagine getting through it without this amazing Boulder community. But I wouldn't want anyone to go through what we've gone through. And we know that there's going to be more homes that are lost, and the resources and the help to continue to mitigate fires and wildfires is extremely important. And also, I want to say that our firefighters don't have enough support. They don't have enough funds and resources. And we need to be able to, together as a community, come and give them the resources they need to not only fight firefighters, but prevent them.
And again, you've been listening to Courtney Walsh, who lost her home in the Calwood fire last October. Congressman Neguse has introduced the 21st Century Conservation Corps for our Health and Our Jobs Act in the U.S. House alongside Senator Ron Wyden. If approved, the bill would make major investments in wildfire resiliency and mitigation efforts, as well as major investments in conservation and forest restoration.
On the next alternative radio, hear Eddie Claude Jr. and Cornel West on the legacy of James Baldwin. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Here's a way to simplify your life. Donate that vehicle you no longer need to help us bring you more great public radio. It's easy and free to you. Here's how. To get started, call 1-844-KGNU-CAR or go to kgnu.org.